It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Do you want to learn to beat jet lag like a Navy SEAL beats jet lag? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today on Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky, and we've got a guest, another Andrew Herr from, he is the founder of FlyKit, and we're going to talk about what jet lag does to your body and how you can get past it and beat it. So, Andrew, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Andrew. It's great to be here.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you. So, all right, we're talking about jet lag and we're talking about Navy SEALs and all these difficult, you know, professions and people that have to deal with jet lag. So tell us a little bit about you. What have you got to do with this whole thing? Is this something you've had to deal with?
Well, I would say that if I lived my life 10 times, I would have been a doctor, five of them. My dad's a doctor and my mom's side of the family is military, including some real war hero stuff in the past. So, long story short, I was interested in both those. I found a way I could study both of them in university. I ended up with graduate degrees in immunology and health physics and national security policy in graduate school. And somebody walked into the career center and said, "Hey, we need someone who does biology, national security, and can write." And they're like, "Well, we know this guy, Andrew." And that started a 7-year career in and out of the Pentagon, running human performance efforts for the military, where I got to do everything from peering 20 to 50 years into the future to working with elite units today. And through some of the science that came up in the work you mentioned, Navy SEALs and fighter pilots, I was able to discover some brand new science around jet lag and use that to help people sleep well their first night anywhere in the world.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay. So then we're going to learn from you all about jet lag today. Let's start off with, what is jet lag? What's happening there?
So everybody's heard about this issue that if you fly long distances, you know, across a lot of time zones, then your body clock might be stuck in LA or New York or Chicago when your body, actual body, is in London or Paris or Tokyo. And that's a huge part of it. But the key thing is there's actually something missing to that circadian rhythm model. And that's where the military research came, which is, you know, sure, it takes time to reset your body clock. But we discovered that when you take off in a plane, you know, planes are pressurized to about 8,000 feet relative pressure. So the equivalent of being on a mountain.
Okay.
And taking off then is like climbing an 8,000 foot mountain in 15 minutes. And that causes a lot of problems in your body. It turns out that rapid pressure change causes some effects that are like decompression sickness and that are like altitude sickness. It's causing oxidative stress in the body. And then as long as you're up at altitude, you're cruising at 74%, about 74% of the normal oxygen you're breathing in. And so this combination now actually causes a lot of challenges in your body. It's causing oxidative stress, which is when you're having chemical reactions that are damaging parts of the cell. And then it's also causing inflammation. And inflammation is a big buzzword today, you know, really just means activation of the immune system. But the key is that it's inappropriate activation of the immune system, meaning it shouldn't be happening. And, you know, when we're inflamed, it can affect our gut. You know, bloating, constipation, things like that. When we're inflamed, it affects our mood. Turns out that if you cause inflammation intentionally in a research study by injecting some cell wall parts from bacteria, somebody's anxiety is going to spike after you do that. So it's affecting our mood, our gut, our energy levels. Because when you have inflammation, actually, your immune system causes your brain to kind of use less energy. And so basically, all of these kind of brain fog, fatigue, gut issues, and then inflammation affects our sleep quality. So suddenly, if you've had a chance to fly long distance and you know that feeling of jet lag, it's not just not being able to sleep. It's your whole system is messed up. And the inflammation piece is this really big missing piece of what was going on. Uh-huh. And the second piece is, what we discovered is when you block the inflammation from happening and just kind of keep it low, and there's a bunch of strategies we can talk about to do that, suddenly you can shift someone's circadian rhythm overnight. Where, you know, all the research says that you can do it at one, maybe two time zones a night, and you have to go through this long, painful process, or you have to try to change your time zone, your circadian rhythm before you leave, and, you know, go to bed at 6 p.m. when you're at home, which nobody can really do.
Right.
But we found that if you bring all the tools together, so there's actually a lot of ways to shift your circadian rhythm. There are supplements that can help, and not just melatonin, but melatonin too. There's light, there's meal timing, there's insulin signaling, because that affects circadian rhythms in your gut and your hormones. So basically, if you bring it all together, you can fly from the US to Asia or Europe and sleep well your first night, but you have to handle both of these, the inflammation and the circadian rhythm. And I'd say that's the key discovery, is that there are really two pieces to jet lag.
Wow. Okay. So that is actually really helpful and informative. I appreciate that. What I'd like to do is to kind of dig into each of the pieces there and understand what happens in each of the different things that we typically hear about jet lag and all. But I have a question first, because based on your explanation there, so based on what you were describing of what happens when we kind of take off in a plane and we go so high so quickly, then wouldn't jet lag impact me even if I'm not crossing time zones?
100%. And if you talk to people and ask them, hey, do you feel worse when you get off a flight, even if it's a couple hours, 2-3 hours? Everybody will take a moment to, most people will take a moment to think and be like, yeah, I feel lower energy, or my joints bother me, or my legs are swollen. Absolutely. There is this flight inflammation phenomenon that you get, and is something we work a lot with pro sports teams on.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Imagine, okay. Obviously pro athletes are flying all the time, and inflammation for them is not just, you know, not feeling well for a couple of days. It affects their performance and can, you know, predispose you to getting injured or something like that, which is very costly for them.
Right. Right. Well, okay. So let's take it this way. You mentioned several different things that people typically do when they're trying to address jet lag. Let's back up and kind of take those one at a time and talk about them. So I'm going to start off with the concept of, all right, if you know that you're going to go across several time zones, then trying to kind of reset your clock before you even get on the plane is one of the things that we typically hear and that you had mentioned. What's the deal with that? What really happens? What's the best approach?
So that absolutely can work for the circadian component. It's not going to do anything for the inflammation component, but for the circadian component, you can absolutely shift your circadian rhythm. You have to be very aware of the signals your brain is getting to do it. So if you're going to shift your circadian rhythm beforehand, one of the big signals to your brain of when it should be awake is light. So our eyes have receptors that aren't for seeing. They're for sensing if there's blue light out, because blue light means it's daytime. If you think about a wood fire, maybe not a natural gas fire, but a wood fire, it's orange and red flames. There's no real blue light coming from that. And so one of the mechanisms our brain has to sense if it's daytime or if you should be awake is blue light. And these receptors feed right into the circadian rhythm in your brain, the suprachiasmatic nucleus. And so if you're walking around and you don't have to have a neon sign like you do have behind you that's blue, 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 but even the white or even slightly off-white kind of yellow lights that you would have in your house have a lot of blue light coming out, a lot of light in the frequency spectrum that will affect your circadian rhythm. And so the things you can do are, some people have, you know, no blue bulbs in their house or bulbs that have no blue light. Uh-huh. They're very orange, for the record. Like, you know, some people feel very strange around them, but that can work. And also, you got to be careful about screens then, you know, computer, phone. Or the other option that is typically a little bit easier, if you're not somebody like me who might be willing to put, you know, lights in their house that are different colors, is blue light blocking glasses, because those can just filter out the blue light that's coming in and you can still see. And so there's a couple different things you can do, but that's, for example, one piece of it. And then you can start to go to bed earlier by blocking the blue light earlier. But you're also going to want to make other changes around meal timing, around when you exercise, possibly. All these different things can shift your circadian rhythm. For example, you're going to want to exercise typically in the morning, if you want to go to bed at night, because if you exercise right before you go to sleep, it's going to keep you awake. You're activating stress hormone systems, which is not a bad thing. Exercise is great, but it can disrupt sleep. You're going to want to shift caffeine earlier, or ideally reduce it in that case. So there's a bunch of things you're going to want to make changes. It absolutely is the case that you can shift it ahead of time, but you're going to have to make sure that also works with your social life. So if you have a work meeting two nights before you go and you need to be out on dinner and you're trying to shift it, that could just blow the whole thing up. If you have a family event, all these things. So, you know, it's a little bit of a fragile strategy, only because you're trying to adapt your normal home life before you travel to a new schedule. Travel's already disruptive enough. Now you're disrupting the time before travel. And so for some people that works, and for some people it doesn't work. And that's really, you know, dependent on the person.
Right. Okay. So before we get past the exercise part that you're talking about here, tell us, when you say exercise, what does that mean? What type of exercise? Are there things that we should try to do for sure? Are there things that we should avoid? Give us a better sense of that.
Well, if you're trying to shift your circadian rhythm before you leave versus the benefits of exercise for the inflammation component, that's potentially a little bit of a different thing.
Okay.
Exercise is almost always a good thing. But what I was referring to is really a timing question. Again, you want to make sure you're not really raising your stress hormone levels, like adrenaline, near when you go to bed. So if you do need to exercise closer to bed, in that case, typically a resistance training workout, a weightlifting workout, especially if it's not like, you know, kind of maxing out, might be a little better, or might be better than a hard cardio workout or a high intensity interval training workout. But, you know, if you're doing those in the morning, then that's probably going to be okay. And research is very clear that exercise in the morning helps people sleep at night even better. Exercise is always good, but in the morning is probably the best. And so in the morning, you don't have to be as worried about raising stress hormone levels, because there's time for that to taper off before you get into your evening. So, you know, I think that's generally how I think about it, is workouts, move in the morning if you can, if you're trying to go to bed earlier. And then if you do need to work out later, just think about things that are not quite as maximal, not quite as, leaving you, you know, on the floor gasping, because you want to keep your system a little calmer if you're trying to go to bed earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. And then you also mentioned food and diet in there. But before we get into that, and before we answer that question, let's stop for a quick commercial break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the diet element. So stay tuned. We'll be right back on Sleep Science Today.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Join a community of people interested in sleep using the social media links in the description for this episode. We offer everything from a free sleep support group to live meetup Q&A sessions and events to a Facebook group and so much more. Sleep Science Today is making sleep a participation sport. If you're not signed up, you're missing out. All right. Welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We are talking with Andrew Kerr from FlyKit, and we're talking about the lessons that he learned by working with the military and elite athletes. So we were just about to answer the question about diet and how that impacts jet lag. So what do we need to know there?
Yeah. So diet is a huge piece because for two reasons. One, what we eat affects our propensity to inflammation. And we talked in the last segment about how much inflammation can play a role. And then when you eat is a big signal for your circadian rhythm. And so if we're trying to, you know, optimize our diet for jet lag, we want to make sure we're optimizing it for a low inflammatory diet. So what does that mean? That means we're not eating a ton of carbs, because if you eat a ton of carbs, it can spike your blood sugar, and that can cause some inflammation, some oxidative stress on your blood vessels, which can lead to inflammation. Two, we want to probably eat a little bit smaller meals because, you know, on days when you're traveling, you're probably a little bit more sedentary. You're sitting more because you're on a plane, you have a long flight, something like that. And then three, you want to get plenty of vegetables and, you know, healthy fruits, and because these provide natural polyphenols and other anti-inflammatory compounds that help you, that help your body be more protected against inflammation. So what does that look like in practice? Lower carb. And for, you know, for people who don't live in nutrition science, that means, you know, a little bit less bread, rice, pasta, corn, things like potatoes, things like that. Higher protein, you know, lean proteins, fish, chicken. If you do well with red meat can be fine. And then lots of vegetables and a little bit smaller meals. And that's going to set you up better to keep more stable blood sugar, more stable, low inflammation. And then the timing piece. So there's sort of two schools of thought on eating when you travel. Okay. One group says, fast and don't eat anything. And the benefit of that is when your body doesn't have enough calories, it has to slow some things down. And one of the things it slows down to begin with is your immune system. And so if you already have a propensity to inflammation because you're flying, then calming your immune system down by not eating or fasting can be beneficial. And then if you have gut issues, not putting food in your gut tends to, you know, give you less inflammation there. But the challenge of that is then you're more likely to have stress hormones for another reason, which is travel days can be a little more stressful than the average day. And we all know that being hangry, you know, being hungry and not having, you know, had a lot of food in our system can then make us feel more stressed and more upset. And so, and by the way, if you end up getting really upset and you're getting more cortisol and stress hormones, that can mess with the inflammation and the sleep we need. So the other school of thought is if you can block that inflammation other ways, then it's better to eat because then your mood is better, your brain is fed, and you don't get this hangry. And so the way we've designed kind of, and we'll talk more if you want about FlyKit and the way we design products later, but we've decided let's get people to eat because we want them to be calm and their brain to be nourished, and we'll manage the inflammation the other way. Mm-hmm. But regardless, you've got to make sure you don't eat too close to sleep. I think everybody knows that when you have a big meal a couple hours before you go to sleep, you just don't sleep as well that night. The research is very clear on this. The science behind it is interesting, though, that like everyone knows this is real, but the mechanism of it, everybody kind of hand waves that it's insulin or your body is, you know, using energy to digest. It's not totally clear why it happens from a scientific standpoint, but it doesn't matter. We know it's real. And so we, you know, in our FlyKit programs, we have an algorithm that gives you a custom program. We're ensuring people don't eat ideally 4 hours, you know, don't eat, you know, closer than 4 hours before they go to bed. Three can be okay, but four is really ideal. And so those are the two things we're thinking about with eating, is really keeping it low inflammatory and then also making sure you don't eat too close to bed, because even if you're sleeping on a plane, especially, you're already going to have not as good sleep anyways, even if you're in the front of the plane, because the vibration and the noise and the other things. But long story short, that's what we're thinking about with eating. And then to circle back with exercise, we talked about before, how about how to use exercise if you're trying to shift your circadian rhythm before you leave. Mm-hmm. But what about on if you're not and or on travel days? And the answer there is we really want to use exercise to lower your inflammation. And we do that two ways. One, if you can exercise before you leave, in the period after you work out, your body turns up its protective systems in a way that means you're not going to be as affected. The effects of air travel aren't going to hurt you as much. And so you're going to have less inflammation from it. And then when you arrive, exercising can kind of suck some of that inflammation out of the system. What kind is best? I love weightlifting for people's bodies, but cardio type exercise or high intensity interval type exercise is probably a little bit better at what we're doing there. So if you have a choice, that kind of cardio or HIIT kind of workout, you know, where you're really getting your heart rate up, really pushing yourself, is a fantastic way to lower that inflammation and then set you up to feel better and not have all these nasty effects of the air travel.
Wow. Okay. Okay. So there's a lot of pieces in there. One of the things that is, you know, one of the questions in my mind as you're talking about this is, so, you know, you're doing all this work with Navy SEALs, with, you know, people who are in these really high intensity types of jobs and things. And when we think of a Navy SEAL, we typically think of someone who's really physically fit and very mentally aware. And, you know, they're doing all this stuff for their actual job. And now you're coming in and you're looking at a different aspect for them. And the question is, were there things that they were doing wrong? And if there were, and you need to make adjustments, how did that work with the fact that they already had, I'm assuming, a very particular exercise program and timing program and everything they were doing already? So how did that work? Did you have to make changes? How did it all fit in?
Yeah, I mean, so it's the same with professional athletes and elite military and others. Like, you can't tell them to go to sleep when the game is on. You know, they're not going to, you can't be like, oh, well, you have to get 8 hours of sleep tonight. And they're like, I'm going on a mission. So with anybody with a demanding and, let's say, kind of a strict schedule, you have to work around it. And the good news is that better is better. So even if somebody can't do every element of what we're talking about because the mission or the game doesn't allow it, the more you can do, the better you're going to feel, the better you're going to perform. Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about, you know, are people willing to change their routines? And the answer is, it depends which routine. And it depends how much value they feel from changing it. So you're never going to have somebody test something for the first time before the World Series or before a real mission. You're always going to do it in training. You're always going to do it in practice time. And somebody's going to say, wow, I feel better. I'm going to perform better. So then I want to have buy-in and I want to do this. And so that's kind of, you know, the approach that is best is, as with anything, whenever you're trying something new, you don't try it the day before, even if you're not a Navy SEAL, even the day before you run a 10K or a marathon, you never try something new then. You try it in training, you see the benefit, and then you see if it's worth changing your routine. Mm-hmm. And it's always fun when you can get people who feel a little bit invincible to recognize that there are things they can and should do other than drinking 5 Red Bulls. And we can do that and we can help people figure that out. And it helps them not only in the short term, but in the long term, because you're just putting, you know, you don't become a Navy SEAL or a fighter pilot if you're the kind of person whose body cannot take a lot of stress. You just, it's, no matter how much you want it, there's a physiological difference between those individuals and a normal person. And, but they, by the end of their career, their bodies are hurting too. Because sure, they can handle more, but man, do they put more on it than the average person. And so my goal is not only, you know, I want to help everybody who flies, whether it's the one trip you've been saving up for 5 years to go to Europe or a retirement trip, or whether it's, you know, a big work trip where you need to perform and you, you know, the your earnings and your bonus and your job's on the line, or whether it's, you know, these people with, you know, elite jobs. I want to help them not only in the short term, But also, you know, for people who travel for business a lot, it takes a toll on their body. And that can take a toll on their family life too. And so, and for the military guys, it takes a toll on their body each time, but also cumulatively. So, you know, the beauty of what we're trying to do is I want to make it simple to have less impact and feel better when you travel. And then if you integrate and make look at the cumulative benefit, I want to really have something really beneficial. There's a lot of factors, but it's well known. There's many studies that epidemiologically, flight attendants and pilots who fly a lot don't live as long as you'd expect. One of our hypotheses for what's going on is not just the sleep disruption, but the effects of flying on the body are really heavy.
Right, right. Well, so we're going to get into FlyKit in a minute here, but let me ask this other question. We're talking about, you know, high performers. And now I'm thinking about, you know, high performers from the business world, for example. And here's my question. So, you know, I'm a sleep clinician now. I started life as an attorney. I actually still practice law, but I started life as an attorney. And in my early days, it required me to constantly be flying from the East Coast to the West Coast and back and forth. And you have just enough time to land, go get into a meeting. You get whatever food they bring to you. You work until it's time to run back to the airport to get on the plane. You got to be up late because you got client dinners. You can imagine just your schedule is just mayhem and there's no time to say, oh, let me take some downtime and get a nap and let me go to the gym and exercise. That's not going to happen. So for people who have those types of jobs, are there any tips? I realize it's not ideal, obviously, but are there any tips of what's the best that they could do to help themselves?
Of course. There's always a way to make any scenario easier on the body and the brain. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one, you're going to want to block the inflammation from the flying and make sure your sleep's going to be better those nights. You know, we talked about diet and exercise, but there's also supplement approaches that we've really pioneered, and we have a patent actually on a supplement approach to manage the inflammation and jet lag. And so basically there's compounds that can block the inflammation from flying, and then there's compounds that can keep it low, all natural, safe kind of stuff. And so that's, you know, we have both a big jet lag product we call FlyKit International, and then a domestic one where you already keyed in on the what about shorter flights. Mm-hmm. And we're helping people block that. So we're using these polyphenol extracts. These are the compounds that make, you know, raspberries red and blueberries blue, that people might have heard that there's antioxidants in fruits and vegetables. It turns out that's not true. They're not antioxidants in the way they work in your body. It turns out to be kind of a nice thing to say, and they might work that way in a test tube, but that's not how they actually work in your body. What they do is they turn up the cell's natural protective systems so that it's not affected as much by stress. And then vitamin C actually is an antioxidant and is protecting. It's a particular type of oxidative stress that you get from flying. And then we're using omega-3 fatty acids, which are precursors your body uses to make anti-inflammatory compounds. So we're using these kinds of compounds to keep the inflammation low. Now, you're working all day and your stress levels are high. What do I want to do to manage that? In even as little as 8 minutes, and I imagine there's an 8-minute block somewhere in there, you could step away, or you're in an Uber or a taxi, or even 8 minutes of a meditation or breath work can do wonders for lowering your stress levels. And lowering them, you know, there's kind of an exponential of stress sometimes where if you're getting higher and higher, then it's like the stress causes more stress in a way. So keeping it even a little bit lower could be really helpful. The next thing is alcohol. Now, some people are going to say, look, I have to, if I'm not having wine at this big dinner with a client, they're not as likely to do a deal with me. And that might be something you don't have a choice about. But alcohol ramps up our sympathetic nervous system, ramps up some of that kind of stress-related system, fight or flight system. And because of that, disrupts sleep. And because of that, causes inflammation. It's a real cycle there. So if you can't avoid alcohol when you need to go at a kind of 100 miles an hour, we really recommend it. And even having less. And again, that's one of those things where maybe for your business center, you do need to have a glass of wine, but you don't need to have three or four. And that's, you know, a trade-off. And one is very different physiologically than three or four. Right. And can you get a workout in? Can you, maybe you have a, you know, maybe you can go to the gym and get a real workout in. Maybe you can't, but you've got to talk to a client in between meetings that's, you know, just going to be on the phone. Go for, can you do it while you're walking? Can you build in these tools to physiologically support your body and brain? And then last thing there on that side is, what are you eating at those dinners? I already talked about the things that are kind of lower inflammatory eating strategies. Maybe instead of the fried chicken, you order the fish and have something a little lighter, and that can be helpful. And then, you know, the one thing about hotel rooms that's actually quite good for sleeping is it's relatively easy to make them cold, and people sleep better when they're cold. Most people sleep best in the 67 to 69 degree range.
Right.
And they're pretty easy to make dark. Now, some of these have these, like, you know, clocks that are blaring blue light, and you can just turn those on their edge or unplug them. But bring, you know, close the blackout curtains. If it doesn't close well or doesn't stay together well, and there's a big sliver in the middle, you know, there's those hangers that have the clips on them. So people will even take, pull the curtain together and use those clips to keep it closed. It's kind of the, like, yep, you know, advanced technique there. Yep. Cold and dark will make your sleep better. And even if you're only going to get 6 hours of sleep, make it high quality.
Right, right.
And by the way, a final trick I'll give you is take a shower before you go to bed. Great research that will help you sleep better.
Fantastic. I love those tips because they're realistic and everybody can do them, and it's very helpful. So let's go into our second break here. And when we come back, I want to hear about, so how did FlyKit get created? What's in it? What does it do? So we'll be back on Sleep Science Today, and we're going to be talking about FlyKit.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Join a community of people interested in sleep using the social media links in the description for this episode. We offer everything from a free sleep support group to live meetup Q&A sessions and events to a Facebook group and so much more. Sleep Science Today is making sleep a participation sport. If you're not signed up, you're missing out. All right, welcome back to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. We're talking with Andrew Herr, CEO of FlyKit, and we are about to learn what the heck is FlyKit, what's in it, what does it do?
Well, we've talked already a lot about things you can do to make it easier on your body, to block the inflammation from flying, to sleep better. But, like, unless you're taking a page of notes here and then going to go into the papers and decide the optimal times to do things, like, there's a lot of work to be done to translate that into a simple protocol. And so what we've done with FlyKit is we've made it simple. We've built an app that takes in your flights, and you tell it when you sleep at home and when you want to sleep at your destination, and answer a few questions about your body. And it will create a custom program for you for when to eat, sleep, and use the different items in your FlyKit. So what do we put in the FlyKit? I talked about blue light blocking glasses already. We give you a pair that's designed for travel. What do I mean? Well, turns out if you're on a plane and you need to use them, or in an air hotel room, if they're too light, if they let too much light in, then they're not going to work. Mm-hmm. And if they let too little light in, you're not going to see.
Right.
And so we've designed them to be perfectly in the middle, and then also lightweight and flexible if you drop them or if you sit on them in your seat. So we've really designed these blue light blocking glasses for travel, and they're really a fantastic a pair of glasses. And people then use them at home after they buy them for travel. Okay. And then we're going to give you all the supplements you need. So there's 5 different supplements. I mentioned these polyphenols, these compounds that upregulate, that help your cells protect themselves. We use an organic pomegranate extract. and combined with vitamin C for that protection. Then we're using these specially concentrated omega-3 fatty acids that keep the inflammation low throughout the time. Then we're using a mix of methylated B vitamins. That's the activated form of B vitamins, methylated B12 and B6. What that's doing is when you take that, it actually makes your circadian center in your brain more sensitive to light. So when I need to shift your circadian rhythm forward, I give you these methylated B vitamins. And when I need to give your circadian rhythm shift backwards, I'm going to give you a mix of magnesium glycinate, which calms the body and gut and brain, and melatonin, which is a signal to your brain that sleep is coming sooner. So that's going to shift you backwards. Uh-huh. And then I'm going to use meal timing to make sure you can sleep well and you don't eat too close to sleep. And then I'm going to give you exactly the right amount of sleep. What do I mean? Well, it turns out one thing that's easy to do wrong when you're flying long distance is sleep too much. That might seem crazy because we all want to be rested after a flight. But if you fly from the US to Asia and you sleep 6 or 8 hours, you're going to wake up and it might be 3 p.m. or 4 p.m. in Tokyo. And if you wake up at 4 p.m. in Tokyo, you're not going to bed well that night.
Right.
And so we give you exactly the right amount of sleep based on our algorithms that we've refined over a long period of time here. And also, because you didn't get as much sleep as you might normally get, the first order negative effect of not sleeping is inflammation. And I just talked about the flight causes inflammation. So now if you have the flight and the sleep, but the beauty of our fly kit system is we can give you a little less sleep so you're going to be able to go to bed that night and block that inflammation with the supplements we're using. So basically, fly kit is a full protocol for when to eat, sleep, and use supplements and use sleep timing and meal timing, all these things together to shift your circadian rhythm and block the flight inflammation. And our goal is really to make it easy. And then there's one other piece. We give you this drink mix, which is a mixture of sugar and methylcobalamin, methylated B12, and P5P, which is this activated form of vitamin B6. Now, I just talked a bunch about inflammation, and now I'm telling you I'm giving you sugar. And we all know that sugar can cause inflammation, isn't good for us. So what am I doing giving you sugar? The answer is sugar leads to a release of insulin. And if you give somebody the right amount, not so much that it's going to totally crash their body, but enough to give an insulin response, that insulin helps reset your peripheral circadian rhythm in your liver, in your gut, and other places. And we need to reset that also. Uh-huh. And so we're going to give that to you, and we recommend mixing with coffee, or if people don't drink coffee, tea, and if people don't drink any caffeine, we give other recommendations. But long story short, we're going to give you what we call this circadian reset mix, drink mix. You're going to drink this mix, and that's going to make you kind of catapult you, reset your circadian rhythm, and catapult you with good energy into the day. So I just said a lot of things, and that could seem really complicated, of course. Yeah. But there's an app just giving you a reminder for what to do. And so that's how we make it simple, is it just says, you know, take one sustain capsule now, take one protect capsule now. And, you know, we're very transparent. All the ingredients are on the label. There's nothing hidden, anything like that.
Okay. So let me get some clarification here. So if I purchase Fly Kit, what I'm actually getting is I'm getting the app, and then you're sending me blue light blocking glasses, different supplements, drink mix you mentioned. So you're sending me things. Are you sending me things that, like, if I am going to be traveling east versus traveling west, am I going to get something different from you? Or how do I know what to do? And how much stuff do I get? Do I have to keep buying it? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. So what we've done is we've designed the kit to have enough consumables, enough supplements in it for a round trip anywhere in the world, or two legs of a multi-city trip. Okay. And each, you know, round trip, you could have two connections on each side, and it'll have plenty for that. So occasionally you have a couple things left over. But for the most part, we've designed it to be right in the sweet spot where you have plenty of stuff, but we're not wasting a bunch. So it all comes super nice in these little blister packs. And so you can, you know, it's not just a bunch of, we're not sending you five bottles of things, because that would be, nobody would want to deal with that. So it's all packaged super nicely, and it's easy to pull one, you know, to take out one at a time and things you need. Uh-huh. And the app is customizing what you take when, if you're going west versus east, But it's not just that. It's the specific flight and the specific number of time zone changes. So it's really customized. The AI algorithm we've developed is looking at hundreds of millions of options to give you the best one. And so it is truly customized. Andrew, if you and I are on the same flight, despite having the same first name and being on the same flight, we would have different programs. But the compounds you need, the supplements you need aren't different. It's when you take them that's different, or the amount of them that you're taking is different. So that's mm-hmm. how we've handled it. We've designed it so you can use the same kit for any trip, but it's totally customized about what you take and how much and when. And that's how we get, you know, we ran a study with Inter Miami, the professional soccer team where Messi plays, and they did a round the world trip, 5 matches, four stops, 24 time zones. So they went all the way around the world. They came back the other way. Wow. Wow. And the players who used FlyKit saw 94% fewer symptoms of travel than the players who didn't. And so wow.
That's a huge number.
We're seeing huge benefits. And about 93% of travelers can go anywhere in the world with minimal no jet lag at this point. So we see incredible benefits because we're customizing, you know, using our algorithms.
Mm-hmm. So,
and so you asked about, do you need refills? And the answer is yes. You don't need a new pair of blue light blocking glasses, obviously, but we offer refills at a lower price to make it easy to use the next time.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm hearing you right, when I go into the app, I'm going to feed in my particular flight?
Yep. You're going to tell it, you can even just give it the date and the flight number, and it draws in all the information directly from the airline. So we have, you know, it automatically pulls in all the flight information. So you tell it you're on, you know, Delta flight 32 to London, or just Delta flight 32 on the date, and it'll pull in and it knows it's going from New York to, I think that's New York to London. I don't have all these flight numbers memorized, but right. It'll pull it all in automatically. Tell it what time you want to go to bed at home and what time you want to go to sleep at your destination. Because maybe on a work trip, you need to be up at 6 a.m. and maybe for fun, you want to wake up at 10 a.m. And that's a 4-hour difference. So if I gave everybody the same program going to London, that 4-hour difference is huge. So we let you customize it to yourself so you get the best results.
And so once I've fed that information in, is the app going to send me like a reminder or something when it's time to take, you know, whatever it's telling me I should be taking?
Yep, you get a notification whenever you need to do anything.
Fantastic, fantastic. Okay. Wow. Well, that sounds like a lot of work that's gone into developing that and to making it effective. And the numbers, like you said, from your studies are really impressive. You know, thank you for doing that. And thank you for coming on the show and explaining this to us, because jet lag is indeed a big issue for a lot of people. So I'm going to assume, but maybe I'm not going to assume. I'm going to ask you, how do they get to FlyKit? You have a website, I'm guessing.
Yep. So come to flykit.com, FlyKitt.com. And you can learn more about FlyKit there. You can reach out to our team via the contact form. You can also email us at support@flykit.com if you have any questions. And obviously you can buy FlyKit Internationals there, the big kit for your trip to Tokyo or Sydney or London. And you can also get our FlyKit Domestic for your trip to Chicago or New York or LA. And all of these will make you feel so much better that we guarantee it. If it doesn't work for you, just write us back. And a human, not an AI, but a human will get back to you, and we'll give you a full refund.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us today. I wish you success with the company. And like you said, FlyKitt.com, FlyKit. And we appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Andrew. It's been great to be here.
All right. So for those of you who've been listening to this episode, please be sure to join us on future episodes of Sleep Science Today. If you want additional information, even free sleep support groups and other things like that, come to sleepsciencetoday.com. We got all sorts of great information for you, lots of free stuff. So join us, and we'll continue to bring you content that will be helpful to help you sleep better. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, sleep science today and sleep better tonight.